remember starting at Second City and thinking, I don't want to do anything else other than comedy. Like, I'll do plays and non-comedic roles and things like that, like I have in my career. But I love comedy so much, and I love improv, and I love the community of comedy, that I don't ever need to do anything else.
That's Naomi Sneekis. She went from dreaming about doing the works of Shakespeare and Shaw to abandoning the theater classics for Second City. These days, you might recognize Naomi from her role in the hit comedy TV show Mr. D. She plays Bobby, the gym teacher. And in the theater and comedy community, Naomi's well-respected as a founding member and performer in innovative comedy troupes. My interview with Naomi Sneekis is coming right up. Hey, it's Keith Tomasek. Thanks so much for listening to my podcast, The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it, brought to you by StratfordFestivalReviews.com. As always, I'm recording from my swanky suburban basement spare room. Well, now it's a little teeny office, but downstairs in the basement still. And I got to tell you, the title, The Inadequate Life, I was just in Ottawa at the National Arts Centre for the Seminovich Award, Canada's largest theatre prize, $100,000. I'll talk more about that next week. But a couple of folks said, "What? Where does that title come from?" So I just wanted to let them know, and you know, The Inadequate Life is part of a quote from Brecht. And I love Brecht, and I love the particular quote. It is, "Fear not death, but rather the inadequate life." So just wanted to share that with you folks. And anyway, I love the quote, "The Inadequate Life." If you like comedy and improv, you're going to love this interview with Naomi. But before we get to it, I want to tell you about two other episodes with improvisers on the podcast. One, my old pal, Sandy Jobin Bevins. Back in Winnipeg, I was the first guy to put him and his friends up on the stage at the old Planetarium Theater. And I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I created the show. They came to me and said, "Hey, we need some help." And anyway, so Sandy talks about the time he was invited to audition for Saturday Night Live. So check out that. And the other one not to miss is Rebecca Northen. She talks to me about creating her improv show Blind Date that began as a 10-minute sketch and has since grown to tour the United States, played off-Broadway and at London's West End. So those are two episodes. Just visit The Inadequate Life and then the episode guides. And before we get to Naomi, I have to thank today's sponsor, Karen Hartwick over at Stratford Tea Leaves. Drop by and check out some of her fabulous teas. They're painting the store, looking really sharp and new, the whole black and white thing. And of course, if you can't visit Stratford, just visit StratfordTeaLeaves.com for some of the freshest and most exotic loose leaf teas anywhere. That's Karen Hartwick over at Stratford Tea Leaves. She's Canada's tea sommelier. I have to thank also Brandon Rudd at Shut the Front Door Improv. That's an organization out of London, Ontario, where I am, and they're dedicated to teaching, developing, and promoting improvisational theater in Canada and the United States. So thanks to those guys. They're the ones that brought Naomi and her husband, Matt Barham, into town. And I also want to thank Pat Tiffin, who helped coordinate the interview. So as I mentioned, Naomi and her husband, Matt Barham, perform a comedy duo. They're known as Barham and Sneekis. It's kind of in the tradition of Nichols and May, you know, from the early 60s, or even better, Stiller and Mara, the married couple who were popular in the late 60s, and of course, other parents to Ben Stiller. So I start talking to Naomi about finding a balance between love and work. So you've been in a relationship with your creative partner, Matt Barham, for 11 years or so.
Yeah.
We all know any relationship is hard. Relationships in show business, equally hard. So I'm going to do it either or. I'm going to ask you three questions.
Okay, I love it.
Little game. The key to a successful work-love balance. Pick either or.
Oh.
Separate cars or separate bathrooms?
Oh, gosh. We don't have either. It's working, yeah, so yeah. I don't know.
That's a like, I wrote the question because I'm living in suburbia.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have
we
both.
Drive a lot together, and I think actually that's the secret of one of the secrets, because we write a lot in the car.
So good, that car time.
Yeah, and we talk a lot, and we end up like recording a lot of our jokes that we have in the car and then using that in our sketch show.
That's really cool. So what would you record on while you're driving? Just like your phone or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I know. Because then we were talking once about community calendar characters and how like they're the worst at like saying, "Come down to the parking lot for a barbecue," about Save the Whales. So we actually developed these two sketches that are community calendar people that we recorded in the car.
Wow. Yeah, no, I hear you. I do that with my wife. When we drive from here to Stratford, it's an hour and it's like, okay, this is our nice time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this might be better, more on track. A movie night together or a gym together?
Well, we do both together too. We do everything together. I like a movie night together because if we watch a movie together, Matt's adamant that I'm not allowed to do anything else because I like to have projects while I'm watching a movie, but then he feels like I'm not really watching the movie, which is true. I'm doing my taxes. So, but if we go out for a movie, then that's great because then it's just focused. Yeah. And they don't let you bring your taxes into cinemas anymore. And
the gym.
And we do that too. Like, I think that's a really good one because it gives us the impetus to go. Like, we'll say, oh, we're leaving to go to the gym and we'll be there together. And then we don't actually like work out together. No, but we're there together. We do a lot together. Yeah. It's good though, because then you sort of motivate each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Last one. Banning mobile phones in bed or banning mobile phones at the dinner table?
I would say dinner table.
Interesting. That's what my wife said when I prepped this. She's like, oh, and I'm like, really?
Yeah. I mean, we don't ban. We have no rules. No,
of course.
We don't know. Some couples are like, no cell phones in the bedroom.
Oh, we don't have that rule.
Which is probably smart, and we're not at all on that page. But it's like, if I wake up early, which I often do, I can like hang out and stay in bed longer if I have my phone.
Right.
And then I'm like playing a solitaire game or I'm checking my emails. And then at dinner table, I would prefer to have them gone just because then there's a potential of chat.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, me too. Yeah. And we have a little guy there. So that's, you know, I'm trying to set a good example for
right,
you.
Right.
So overall, this has been insightful though. So it sounds like you guys spend a lot of time together.
We do. Yeah.
And so what would you say is one of the keys to the successful love work balance? Apart from being together that much.
I don't, you know, it's funny. I've not really taken stock of what the key is.
So let me put it a different way. Okay. Right? I'll put it, so we go back to Naomi, 12 years ago, you first lay eyes on that guy with the curly hair.
Yes.
You're slowly falling in love with this guy. He's so creative.
Not slowly.
Wow. Okay. So hot. What advice would you give that Naomi about getting involved with someone you're going to work with?
I think, okay, there's two things. I think we have laughter available to us, which is super helpful. It's not always like people see us and they're like, oh, you must be laughing all the time. And it's not always like jokes at home, but we do have a lot of jokes. And if we can always get back to laughter, that's awesome. That's what we always strive for. And then the other part is that we have to make sure we have individual careers and lives as well as our together stuff, because we do so much together. Like we create and we, you know, we live together.
Right.
We have dogs.
With one bathroom.
We have one bathroom.
Dogs, plural?
We have two dogs and things like that. So we have to make sure that, you know, we also have friends that are separate.
And what's something, so my wife introduced me to tennis, and that's something that's become a part of my life. Oh. What is something that you've introduced to Matt's life that he didn't have before you think? Either just creative or
happiness.
Just...
happiness. Yeah.
He was just joy, not happy at all before he met me.
I guess. I mean, a small thing, I just gave it to him. I don't know. What did I...
But are you serious? Do you mean like an air of levity or something like that when you say happiness?
For both of us, maybe. Yeah, I would think we have... there's a joy in our lives now that maybe wasn't as prevalent or...
And is there something that he's given to you? Maybe, you know...
Like order, which is a really odd thing because I think I'm quite organized. But he is somebody that is quite meticulous about... finishing projects and order in the house. Like... for instance, like dishes are really important for him to have done. And I don't care. Like I could leave them for 3 days, no problem, knowing that I would get to them eventually
sooner
if
later.
I have time. But he likes the opposite. And I appreciate that. I think that's a nice thing to have. Like he's brought cleanliness to my life. Oh, that's
so is he odd. The kind of guy that can't go to bed if the dishes aren't done?
Not that he can't, but he would prefer.
Right. Yeah.
But he's also the kind of guy with like, we have stacks of clothing in the bedroom and that's okay.
That's
like,
interesting. Yeah.
He's not. You know, he's not crazy about it. So I would think that.
And order,
I would think
order. That, order and cleanliness.
Yeah, order and cleanliness. Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Like, skill-wise, he plays guitar at home, and I love that. He's brought a lot of music into our house. And, you know, I'll have music on, but I don't play any musical instruments. And family, like, he's a big family-oriented person, so we really, like, pull our friends who are our family together.
Yeah.
A lot, so.
Yeah, that's my wife brought that. I'm first generation Canadian, mm-hmm. So there's no extended family anywhere in my life. So yeah. I grew up, I was like it, and my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
But my wife's from this huge family, so that's a whole revelation to me.
Yeah, we both don't have big families, but we have friends that are like our family that we really cherish. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else I might have given to him, but I really think it's all negative. Like I really, like I brought a level of chaos to his life, or like hoarding.
Hoarding? Are you a hoarder?
I'm like an organized hoarder. I keep a lot of things because my parents went through the war.
Same thing with mine.
So I have to keep things. It's awful. I try so hard to throw them out and then I need them the next day.
That's so funny.
It's awful.
Food too though? Because that gets gross.
No, I will make soups with food that's going bad in order to not waste food.
Come on, how do you have time? Like, you're a busy showbiz person. How do you have time to make soup?
That's important. You got to move it. Throw it in a pot with some stock and it's a new soup. And then you freeze it. There's a war on and I'm winning it.
That's hilarious. Okay. Yeah. You've worked with some great TV directors, Stephen Wright, Keith Samples, Jacob Tierney.
Yeah.
How are their styles different, the three of them? Because you've worked on multiple episodes. Mm-hmm. And what do you think you've learned from them? So the three styles, Steve, Keith, and Jacob.
Let's see. That's tough. You know, it's interesting because at Mr. D, we just finished season six. So we're in season six right now. So the crew and the cast, they're a pretty well-oiled machine now, right? So the director comes in and sort of zhuzhes here and there. And really, it's about getting your day. So like Steven's great at like, He does a lot of kids TV, so he knows how to just get his day, which is great. And he's fun too. I mean, that's the core for all these directors. They have to be fun. We're doing a comedy, and if they're not having fun, then what are we doing? You know, if they're like, there are no tyrant directors. Like if a director was like yelling at us,
old
and
school.
Then, yeah. And then we have to be funny out of that. It's impossible.
So talk about their different styles though, too. I'm curious.
Yeah. Like Jacob Tierney, who I adore. And who's one of my faves, he keeps everybody joking and laughing. So like he'll keep like jokes with the crew going and jokes with the cast. And like he said, he gave me a note once. He came over and he was telling Jerry something. He said, Jerry, can you just pick up the pace in this line? And then, no, he probably didn't say that because Jerry would he'd never directed Jerry that way. But he probably said something like a little bit of direction. And then he said, Naomi, just, I don't know, more smiles, more tits.
More tits.
Which, like, it just made me laugh so hard because it's the stupidest direction in the world. He's fantastic. And I, like, jump at the chance to work with him again because he's so much fun. And Keith approaches it in, like not as a, you know, like, again, he's still having fun with everything. He's got a little bit more... not scientific, but theoretical approach to things. Like he's very organized with his shots as opposed to Jacob is a little bit more free flowing.
Sure. Yeah. Impressionistic, yeah. Feel it and see it sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But Keith is great too. Like he keeps everybody moving forward. And a lot of times we have to, kind of have stop production to look at a script or adjust lines and stuff like that. And so you just have to, you know, go with the flow. Yeah.
And then Steve Wright.
And Steve Wright's the same. As I said, like, I think he's really specific about what he needs to accomplish in the day, which really helps the play of it all, so that you're not going like, well, you're not waffling anywhere. You're getting what you need to get
when you get it. And then, but with Jacob, so that environment, is there where he's really, there's a lot of playfulness. Does that not burn out the comedy chops at all, do you think? Or is that possible that that could happen?
I don't think so. I think it keeps you limber. Yeah. Like, I think if you're joking before you're rolling, then you're laughing.
Yeah.
Both times.
Yeah.
Like, I do. Like, I think that if you're, you know, if you have too much time, like people on their phones, or too much time, like just
right,
away from the cast,
yeah,
it doesn't help. Like you got to keep the jokes going.
Okay, so just on the topic of directing and that kind of work, Matt once said,
Barum,
yeah,
okay, just checking. Yeah,
love is at the center of most of our sketches. Love versus loneliness. And which made
that's nice.
And it made me think of Gary Shandling. When he was talking about the Larry Sanders Show, Gary Shandling said, the Larry Sanders Show is actually about love, which would sound like a paradox at first because, you know.
Right.
But if the love didn't exist, the darker attitudes would not play.
That's great.
Yeah.
Bring him in. He sounds real. Oh,
you're
too
awful.
Soon. Too soon. Yeah. Bring Matt Barum in. He's got some things
Barum,
to say.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I think that. Like, I believe that every scene should have light and darkness in it. Like, even if you're doing, like, a Shakespeare play, like The Mackers or something
the
like
Mackers,
that,
yeah.
Then you should have moments where Lady M laughs at herself and moments where she's furious. Like, I think everything has to be in every scene because it's life, right? We don't just go through life going, life is good, content. And fine, and
but then as an improviser and producer, director, when you're seeking that to layer your work with that love at its core, but then get the humor on top of it all, what do you use for your own bullshit detector? How does that work for you?
What do you mean? Like, how do I know when I'm faking it?
Yeah. Or the people around you are.
Oh, I think I get people to look me in the eyes, and I get people to stop and breathe. Like, or I'll say, like in a scene, I'll go, what do you want in the scene?
Right. So that makes at them.
Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, as improvisers, you're always looking for your objective, or you're reacting to what's coming at you. But sometimes if you stop and go, yeah, what do I want in this scene? If you can name it out loud, then you can pursue it more passionately.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I think a lot of times we don't know what we want in a scene. And hey. I think that's the danger of like a sloppy scene.
That's the whole thing between good improv and, you know, party tricks.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you go, what do you want? I just want to make some jokes. I'm like, well,
sorry.
See you at the cocktail party.
You're kind of done there. Which kind of, just because we're talking about that, makes me think of you know, party tricks and how National Theatre of the World just advanced improv in Toronto to a whole new level.
Oh, that's nice.
Talk about how Impromptu Splendor bridged a gap between the Toronto improv community and the theatre community.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was sort of our goal when we first started, to have that exact thing. And it's a constant goal. I don't think it's finished. But I also think, you know, it's funny because we started National Theatre of the World, and with Impromptu Splendor, we started doing theatrical improv. And it wasn't the first time that's been done in the community. Like before us, there were, like I remember Sherry Hollett had like radio plays going on, and then, Kathy Greenwood, Ed Sahaley, and Jonathan Wilson had, Not to Be Repeated, which was plays. They did two act plays with an intermission, and they did the game of, sentences in baskets. So the audience would write sentences, but they did like full characters and arcs, and it was mind-blowing. I think I saw like 10 of their 14 performances. Like, I loved it so much. So when we started, we knew that we wanted to incorporate a theatricality and a professionalism to everything that we do. And I think, you know, it was a challenge. I think it drew theater goers and improvisers. So, but it's a niche. Like, it's a real strange niche, because we started doing improv in theaters,
right,
as opposed to bars.
Yeah, yeah.
And we started at the Comedy Bar.
Of course.
Which was great and amazing. But we were doing like full, like, we were doing like Tennessee Williams with bales of hay and, like, you know,
in the comedy bar,
which is challenging in its own way for improv. But, you know, it was, we just did it. And then we moved to the theater, the Passe-Marais, and that gave us like space, and we could do a whole bunch of other stuff. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think that it's still a challenge.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll ever stop being a challenge to let theater goers know that improv can be theater, and that improvisers know that improv can be theater.
So who were some of the actors that were most receptive in that time from the theater community that sort of came along and played? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, like, because we had a bunch of guests.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we had, like, Fiona Reid came and guested with us. Tony Napo came.
For sure.
Yeah, that was really fun. We had, oh, my God, we had so many people that came.
And what do you think it was? What was
Miles
it?
Miles Potter came and did one play for us.
What do you think it was about those people that they were willing to let their guard down?
I think it's the joy of play that all actors have, that they kind of go, oh, what the F. I'm
right,
just gonna
right.
try this, and it's sort of exploring something maybe that scares them a little bit, that they might want to just take a risk. Often actors feel that if something scares you, you should do it,
right? And yeah, then you guys created ones. The space that would be comfortable for them to do that.
Yeah, like failing. Fiona Reid does Tennessee Williams, and she's done like 100 Tennessee Williams in her career, so she knows the feel of a Tennessee Williams play. You put her in a costume that's Tennessee Williams, you give her a couple of like tea sets and a chaise lounge, she's got it. All she has to do is live in that scene. And she was fantastic.
I bet.
Same with Tony Napo. We did a Sam Shepard with him. And we always, he's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
We always, for Sam Shepard, have like boxes or Tupperware, things that you can throw around without getting broken, because it's a Sam Shepard
so
play.
So funny. Yeah.
And so, and then we always have something to eat. I think I was making sandwiches that day. But Tony came up to us and he said, look, I have to cut my hair for the next show. So if you guys want to cut my hair
on stage,
you can. Wow. So we brought some scissors, and we were like, oh, we're cutting hair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we cut his hair, and the audience was like, what the hell?
I bet.
It was so fun. But he was so, like, electric. I think he kissed, it was Matt, me, and Tony in this show. I don't know where Ron was at the time. And he kissed both of us in the first, like, 5 minutes, like, passionately. And then we all had an agreement that if there was physical stuff, we would just take it slowly and make sure we're checking in with each other.
Sure.
But he was so committed. Like, he's such a good actor anyway. He's such a committed actor that he was just in the scene. It's like Fiona. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Good actors can improvise. They just have to listen.
That's a, yeah. And then how about going the other way?
I think that what happens with improvisers is they start to think, A, that they're maybe not interesting to watch, and so they have to be inventive verbally, or they panic that there's silence on stage, and then they make stuff up and they invent stuff you don't need to, because it's so interesting to watch people on stage doing nothing if they're present. So I think improvisers can make really, really exciting actors.
So tell me about your are you trained more as an actor or as an improviser?
I started as an actor. Like, I went to theater school, and then I thought I'd go to Shaw or Stratford or something like that. And then I moved to BC for 7 years. And then while I was there, I thought I better make sure I auditioned for Second City before I turned 60. Like, I suddenly realized that my life was going past me, and I desperately wanted to audition for Second City because I was brought up with SCTV. And so I went back to Toronto and auditioned, and they wouldn't see me. I crashed the auditions. And then
And you're like, you don't know anybody, you just show up.
I didn't know anybody. Yeah, no, I just showed up.
For some reason, you think they're going to let you in and do an audition.
I was just like, God damn it, you're going to see me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the producer, Carly Baxter, I still remember, she like, I walked out, I went, well, that's that. And she walked out and she's like, we're super interested. She ran after me. It was like one of those great moments. And she said, we're super interested. Would you move from BC? Because I was living in Vancouver, and I was like, yeah, I would love it. Like, I was so excited. And then I remember starting at Second City and thinking, I don't want to do anything else other than comedy. Like, I'll do plays and non-comedic roles and things like that, like I have in my career. But I love comedy so much, and I love improv, and I love the community of comedy, that I don't ever need to do anything else. If this is all I get to do, it's pretty great.
That's a pretty big transition from wanting to go to Shaw. I mean, at least you had your sets up high, your sights up high. So from Shaw, Stratford, to not even touching that anymore. Let's just have fun.
Well, I mean, there are steps between. Like, I did plays, like I did Canadian Stage, and I did like a play with Sky Gilbert that was really funny.
Sure.
And so I did a lot of comedy pieces between that. But suddenly the goal of Stratford and Shaw wasn't important to me, because I was just like, Second City, I get to make people laugh every night. This is the best life in the world.
So if you could take a comedy to Stratford.
No, I still feel like it's too regimented for me now. Like, somebody asked me to do a play a while ago, and it was like a 4-month contract. And I was like, oh, that's, like, I spin a lot of plates in my life. So I being able to do a bunch of different things. If there was a comedy in Stratford, I don't know. It would have to be the right
team,
cast, and the right director, and the right time, and everything else. I'll never say never, but
no, I hear you. But to me, that transition is really fast. That delight, just because, you know, Sean Cullen was there for a season.
Yeah.
He was in Peter Pan,
right,
and then he was in a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum.
Both of them.
So as a plate spinner, though, I guess it relieves some pressure, because you're not waiting for the phone calls to come, but do you feel that other pressure of, oh my God, I have to keep these plates in the air?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. There is a definite pressure of constantly, like, when one plate is slowing down, you got to keep spinning it. So we have like the company and TV stuff, and as I said, individual stuff. So you're always kind of tweaking what needs to be tweaked, but you're never bored. Like,
anytime
I see an artist that is like, and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do, I'm like, just start a company.
But what are like three things you do in your life to manage that? Because now you've got so many plates going in the air. And then, you know, it was actually your buddy, we were talking about Taggart and Torrance. I love that you're wearing the Taggart and Torrance podcast
that hat.
That's so cool. So on that podcast, Jonathan Torrance was talking.
He's another plate spinner.
Well, for sure. But at one
point, he has like a business of
truck rental.
I can do anything.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
But he was talking to me, and he said, at one point, my wife said to me, because he was all over the place, and she goes, his wife said, you're not being a good father, and you're not being a good actor.
Right.
Like, you gotta figure out how to, you know.
Yes.
So I'm curious how that applies to you. When you're, what do you do to keep on track and do all these things well? Like, how do you decide to let things go? Or who do you
don't? I do everything mediocrely. It's just a no. That's a definite challenge. And I don't know if I have the answer. I think you start to let things drop that can't even possibly be a priority. Actually, Jonathan said this. He's like, everything has to feed you either creatively, financially, or emotionally.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't do one of those, like, it shouldn't fall into my list of things to do.
Doing, yeah.
But it also is like, you do refocus your goals. Like for a while, like when I first started acting, I just wanted to work. I just wanted whatever.
Anything. Yeah. Get anything. Me on stage. Yeah.
Exactly. And then after a while, I was like, now I just want to do like important work, like things that I really like. And then you get more and more specific. And now I have the same sort of feeling. Like I want to, you know, guide my career and my life in a way that I'm fed both emotionally and creatively. But it's not easy. You definitely have to, it's a balancing act. We all do that though. Like, don't you find with your family, like suddenly you're like this going, oh, I'm working too much.
Oh, no, that oh, Jonathan, hey, family. That's why those words with Jonathan resonate with me. You know, I'm like, oh, how do you sort of find balance? And do you have a mentor that you go to, or do you look at someone else's life and go, oh, they can do it, I'm doing it?
I would like a mentor. I'm putting out a Craigslist
right now
for mentorship.
improviser, writer, creative genius, TV person.
Inspiration, please.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody said, you know, the only thing you can do is work hard and be nice. And I think that's really held, that I try to be kind and I try to work hard. And I wake up in the morning going, what needs to be done for the next
Problem is I often will go on the work side and let the nice side fade quite a bit.
Yeah, you're a horrible human being. You're a monster.
I piss people off, right?
Yeah.
That's not a good...
But then you're not having any fun, right? Turned it though? Like, have you gotten better?
Well, that's what my wife... When I asked you about what you brought to your wife, because that's what my wife brought to me.
Right.
But then you usually...
Lighten up.
Yeah, and it's okay if it's not perfect.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but it could be so much better. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, that's let's funny. Go. It drives me crazy.
Well, I'm not a perfectionist, which maybe is good and bad, but
it's the being nice part that you talked about. Because it's a community. That's the thing.
Community's
you know,
super important.
It's all about the community.
Yeah. I know that I do spin a lot of plates, and I know that something has to give for it. It's lucky that Matt and I do spend so much time together, and so much of our work is together, because we don't have to suffer for it as much. Like, I think there are still times where we go... You know, we have a little cottage that we go to, and that's our time.
Get away.
Yeah, like we just really get to hang out with each other away from work.
And do you ever analyze the relationship far enough ahead that you go, look, if we're both working on the same projects and they don't go, we're not going to have any money, so you better have something on that side and I better have something on this side? Does it get that intense?
No, this is very educational, though. Thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. Well,
I'm an outsider. It's easy as an outsider looking in.
Yeah,
right?
Would you? Actually, maybe you can be my mentor. This is great.
Okay. You'll end up living in a suburban house in London.
Right. You don't look miserable.
You'll have three bathrooms.
I don't need that many bathrooms. So much more to clean Matt.
Yeah, because that's hilarious. Yeah, that's right, because he's the guy. So the planning isn't, so you don't ever go, okay, you don't look 2 years ahead and you go, hey, wait a sec, if this doesn't work out and that doesn't work out, we better say, okay, you better do something over there apart from what I'm doing.
I think everything's going to work out, which is super disappointing when it doesn't. And then I also think that we don't plan overly. Like, we recently got our green card. So that's the most planning we've really done as far as like life goals and things like that, because we have to be in LA a certain amount. But we're smart with money, that we are able to make a little go a long way, because we're artists.
Of course, yeah.
When the recession hit, we're like, what recession? It's just our life.
Yeah.
So we're good at that. And I know that if suddenly we stopped making money, we would be able to be okay until the next
gig. You can coast, yeah.
Yeah. But we also create. So I would create a gig that made me money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, well, it's nice. Not everyone. I don't think everyone has the confidence to feel that. And that gets back to that waiting for the phone to ring. You just don't want to be waiting.
Yeah,
for the phone
I can't
to ring.
Do it. I'm too impatient.
Has that ever happened to you in your career? Like before you hit big, that you were like, uh-oh.
Like the uh-oh financially?
Yeah.
I constantly have that uh-oh. You know, as I said, my parents brought me up to save milk bags, right? I don't even drink milk. How do I have so many milk bags? But I do believe that
you're not kidding, are you?
I'm not.
You have milk bags?
I don't have milk bags. Okay, I do have a couple because my brother visited and he drank milk. But
and you didn't throw them away?
No, because you can use them for poop bags for the dogs. And then you throw them away. I'm not a monster.
Okay, that's
crazy.
Hilarious.
I think I'm smart enough with my money when I have it. I'm very I'm aware of prices and stuff. But so is Matt. Like we're on that same page. We don't live like...
Well, I'm making the assumption that because you're on a TV series, you're set.
Right, but you're not. Like, A, it's Canadian. So tomorrow it could be canceled.
And it's, what, six seasons now?
Yeah, but
what
every
last
season...
What last six seasons
And
in
we
Canada?
Never thought it would come back every season.
Yeah.
So when the season's done, we're like, well, what's going to happen? And, you know, we're... we look at our cottage and we're like, this is the cottage that Joke's built because we're so lucky. But I also recognize, like, if there's a time that we have to rent it out to cover costs, we can do that.
For sure. Yeah.
So we have sort of like, what's it called? Like pillows almost.
That's a nice way.
Where, you know, if we had to, we could, like, we have roommates and stuff like that. And if we had to, we could have more roommates. We could shut down.
You have roommates now?
Yeah. We have like a basement suite that we rent out and then our other friend. But it's more like a fam, like they're our friends. They're our family friends. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm coming over.
It's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun. We have like dinner parties all the time. Just suddenly everybody's at home having dinner. And it's really nice. It's got this great, like it sort of goes back to that community idea that I love.
It's so important. You did a masterclass today for improvisers.
I did.
And I love that you're giving back and letting people, you know, in a smaller community learn.
Like, I like teaching.
It's so cool.
Yeah. I like teaching a lot. I find it really exciting to see people take risks, and in improv everybody's taking risks. By taking a class, you're taking a risk, and you watch people dealing with nerves and then overcoming them, and it's awesome. I love it.
What would you say the top three things are for novice improvisers to be aware of?
That's tough, because I think it depends on what you're dealing with, but one of the things I talk a lot about in my classes are being affected. Like, I think we're really good at being cool on stage and not being affected. So if somebody says a typical statement in improv to shake things up would be, I love you, or I have cancer. And then a novice improviser might go, oh yeah, well I have cancer too. And then you're
done.
Keel again. So being affected then raises stakes and makes something happen emotionally. That's one thing that I really like. And breathing I really like. If you can, you know, challenge yourself to breathe when you're panicking and not think that you're not interesting, because people are so interesting on stage and they don't even know it. They could stand and not do anything, and you're like, something is going on there, and it's so interesting. And if you can just breathe and be grounded, that's these are all things that I continually tell myself too.
Well, this is good though. This is important.
Bring one of those whoopee cushions on stage, just because if all else fails, a little bit of a fart is pretty funny.
My kid. My little guy had a whoopee cushion, and then he found some, like, a silly putty substance that makes farts just by squeezing. It is amazing how long a fart joke goes.
Oh, it goes a long way.
Like, what is that all about?
Yeah.
An accent. So I have to be talking about my kid again, and I'm concerned, though, because he's doing Malik.
What?
From the show. My 10-year-old boy's walking around.
Oh, Malik, Mr. T.
Sorry.
That's hilarious.
Well, it is and it isn't, right?
Well, he's not got a lot of lines, so.
No, but it's the same one. What is it? I forget what it is. Sorry. I asked him to do it before I walked out here because I thought I'd remember, but I forgot. I don't know what it is. Hello, how are you, or something. I don't know.
Oh, when he came in.
His signature
my favorite
line.
Was he came in, he was like, hello, booby, tootie, to Trudy and Bobby, love. So that's Suresh John. He's hilarious.
Did that? Oh, so fun. So fun. Yeah. And like you said, like, not tons of lines, but what a presence.
No, he can do nothing.
One, we're going to wrap up because I know you got a big show to do tonight. What, you said at one point you'd like to have your own show?
Yeah. So Matt and I are working and pitching our own shows all the time. So we just finished writing a sketch show that sold out in Toronto, and we're filming those sketches. So, you know, that's the thing. You got to just keep creating.
Yeah.
Something's going to come out of it. And if you're creating stuff that you're proud of and you're finished, and maybe like something will always come out of everything. That's what I always think. Like, the only opportunity that you can't get is if you're just
not doing
on
anything.
On the couch watching Netflix, which has its place in time. Absolutely.
Sure.
But like, you know, we create these things, and, you know, we did a show in Toronto and it sold out, and we're like, wow, we did that. And I'm proud of that. And if nothing comes of it, that's okay, because something came of it already for us. So,
right.
And it keeps your muscles limber.
Yeah.
I think often actors get a little bit sedentary with waiting. And then when it comes time to audition, or it comes time with an opportunity, they're not ready. Their muscles aren't limber.
Yeah,
so.
That's a good point. And then in the thing you're working on, what kind of format is it? Like, what would you like to do in terms of a format?
Well, we have a couple of pitches. One is a sketch show that is us doing sketches. And it's all relationship sketches, because that's sort of how Matt and I started at Second City, doing relationship-y stuff. And we have a podcast. So we have that, where we interview people. And then we also have like pitches where we play like, you know, two characters in a TV show. So we have one that's like a Mad About You type of show, and one that's sort of an Office.
And so, do you have like pilots and Bibles for all of these projects?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what happens in Canada. So you pitch in Canada to three different networks, and then it's done.
Yeah.
So then you have all these pitches. And now that we're in Los Angeles, we're like, we can go and talk to a network and they're like, we're looking for this kind of show. And you're like, let me look in my,
here
my
we go.
Folder. It's right here. So we have a lot of pitches ready to go.
So the green cards, how much time are you spending in Los Angeles?
We spend about half the year there.
Wow.
Yeah. We go back and forth a lot. And, you know, our family is still here in Ontario. So,
And when you're there, are you mostly writing or what are you doing when you're there?
Yeah, and auditioning and taking some classes. So it's a little bit, it's taking, it's going back to the start a little bit because we need to produce a show. So I don't know when this is airing, but November 5th, we're doing our sketch show at the IO West.
Okay.
So we need to produce more there too and get our muscles going there. And it's all the same sort of thing. You just have to find the energy to do it.
Okay, we'll close on this. Worst audition story.
Okay, the one that comes to mind was auditioning for this really serious play that I had to cry in. And I was running, and I ran from another audition, and I had to change, like, in the car, and I was panicked. I wasn't going to get there, and I got there. And I was sort of, like, focusing on the material because it was really emotional. And I went in there, and I stood in front of the people, and I did the piece, and I thought, oh, I felt really good about it. I turned around. And I walked out of the audition room and I was like, okay, I think you did good, Sneakus. And I realized I tucked my skirt into my knickers. So, on my exit, they saw like my bareness in the back, which isn't a great way to exit any room, unless it's intentional. So that wasn't a great audition. It was good, but it was bad. Do I have any other bad auditions? And there's so many. I blocked them out of my mind. I try to only remember the good ones so that I can do it again.
Yeah.
That's so painful.
That's self-preservation, right?
I know. Auditions are the worst, or they're the best, depending on how you approach it. Somebody said approach it with dedication as opposed to fear or desire.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really
cool,
great thing to say.
All right. Well, thanks so much for spending the time.
Thank you. What a treat. You're so good at this.
You're very
good. Good to talk to you forever.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, Naomi Sneakus. How about that? Hey, Naomi, this is for my friends in the United States, and I do. It's fun to watch the stats on the podcast. I do have some listeners in New York and Los Angeles. If you're in Los Angeles, Naomi and her husband, Matt Barham, are performing as Barham and Sneakus November 5th at IO West Theater. That's the premier venue for improv comedy in Los Angeles. So check that out at the IO West Theater on November 5th, or just visit the website National Theater of the World for all their upcoming shows. In the podcast earlier, we mentioned improviser Sean Cullen, based out of Toronto. Sean's been a regular contributor on The Tonight Show and acted on stages across North America. He'll be on the podcast soon, so keep an eye out for that. And finally, did I mention that in my youth, I was a street performer back in the day, magic and comedy in old Montreal? And I used to close each show by reminding everyone that hang around to watch, just to drop a few bills in my hat, you know, to help out. Well, I'm asking you to do that now digitally right here at theinadequatelife.com. Just visit theinadequatelife.com and click support the show, and you can make a small donation. And if you donate $30 or more, I'll throw in some Inadequate Life stickers and some tea from Karen Hartwick, some beautiful, beautiful Darjeeling tea. Or if you want a different blend, let me know, whatever. And of course, I accept American money at par. I try to put out the podcast at least twice a month. Watch for the next episode of The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it. I'm Keith Tomasek. Thanks for listening.